sequestered for the weekend. They will hear closing arguments from the attorneys Monday morning and will likely begin deliberating the case by midday. Larry Lee, WSAU News.
Janesville police say the body of a woman was recovered from the Rock River yesterday. Authorities say the body of the woman, believed to be in her 60s, was discovered by a 15-year-old boy who was fishing. The discovery comes just 4 days after another body was found, after a man claims he killed three people. An autopsy will determine the woman's cause of death. Meanwhile, the Brewers lost to the Yankees 5-3 last night. They'll try again tonight. You can hear the game on WSAU pregame show at 5:35. The Green Bay Packers drafted a pair of new weapons for Aaron Rodgers to throw to. They drafted Fresno State wide receiver Devontae Adams in the second round and tight end Richard Rodgers from California in the third round. They also picked up Southern Miss defensive tackle Kyrie Thornton in the third round yesterday. And a pair of former Badgers drafted as well, Desmond Southward to the Falcons and Chris Portland to the 49ers. That's news. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
News and weather, on air and online, at WSAU.com. From AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Colby knows quality, and the Colby Gallery professionals know installation. For your window replacement, choose local. Call the Colby Gallery at 888-995-0995.
Saturday, mostly sunny and quite nice through the mid-afternoon, high about 69. By the late afternoon, there'll be some increasing clouds, meaning that Saturday night will be mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of light rain after midnight, low 41. Sunday will be mostly cloudy but relatively warm with a high around 69. There will be a 50% chance of showers or isolated storms. Monday will be cloudy with rain likely and an isolated storm or two possible, high around 67. Tuesday will be mostly cloudy and cool with showers likely, highs in the upper 50s. Wednesday will be partly or mostly cloudy with scattered light showers. Highs will be a bit cooler in the mid-50s. Thursday will be cloudy and even cooler with a good chance for rain, possibly mixing with a few snowflakes. Highs in the mid-50s. I'm Newsline 9 forecaster Caleb Cox on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Well, good morning. It's Saturday in the studio, and I'm Tom King, and we are joined here today by attorney Alan Haugum, pinch-hitting for Merle Kelch today. So we'll be able to take your legal questions, preferably about elder care issues and end-of-life issues, but Alan did go to law school and studied all aspects of the law, so we can take any legal question.
I did, Tom. I am ready with legal answers. Some of them valid, some of them we'll have to check out after the show.
Tell me about the TV show and the movie The Paper Chase. Was that a legitimate look at going to law school?
You know, I did have John Houseman.
Yeah.
And The Paper Chase, I didn't watch too much of that, but I did watch a little bit. And I had John Houseman as a professor. It's the Socratic method, if anybody's ever heard that.
You mean a John Houseman type person?
I'm sorry, yes.
Not John Houseman.
No, not John Houseman himself. Right. That would have been way too convenient. But, no, the John Houseman character, and it's all taught. When I went to school, I went to Madison. I'm from Edgar. Everybody knows, or a lot of people know. I'm from the area. I went to Madison for my undergrad degree and went to University of Minnesota for my law degree. Wanted to see if I liked the metro area, and then wanted to come back here. So, but they taught at my law school by the Socratic method, which means they teach by asking questions. And you say, well, how does that happen? Usually you think of college or law school, it's just someone standing up in the front of the room and they lecture and you take notes and then on a test you have to regurgitate it. But the Socratic method is really, it's an interesting way to teach. It puts you on the spot, but it's where the professor kind of talks about some situation and he asks a question as, how do you handle that, Mr. Haugum?
And you better have done your reading.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, the night before, and I think the classes were probably like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class, and you probably had about 100 pages to read for each class. So you had, and it's 100 pages of Supreme Court decisions and things like that and analysis, and he'll say, you know, if you take this new fact situation and you apply it to what Justice Jackson said on page 75 of the text, how would you apply that, Mr. Haugum? And, you know, it's your entire class then turns and stares at you, and you have to come up with it. So that's really the Socratic method. So then you answer how you think is the right answer. And, of course, no matter what you say, the professor says, oh, but haven't you thought of this? And then you have to go. And it's really... They teach that way.
Is that how attorneys learn how to spin a line of BS off the top of their head in a courtroom when something gets sprung on them by surprise?
Well, you know, and I can't speak from that because I'm not a litigator. My entire job is trying to keep people away from the courthouse most of the time. But it's the type of thing where I think there's a little bit of something to that. It's thinking on your feet, because no matter what you ask, if you do litigate and you're in the courtroom and you're asking a witness something and they give you an answer you're surprised by, you have to come up with something pretty quickly, or you have to have a take on that or a spin on that. It's a little bit like that. It's almost like you're being questioned during the entire class. So we did have, Paper Chase, yes. If anybody wants to read, I'm not shilling a book here, but there's a book from the 70s, a famous author named Scott Turow, T-U-R-O-W.
Sure, former attorney who became a best-selling author.
Yes, I think he's from Chicago. But he went to Harvard Law School, and he wrote a book called 1L, spelled out O-N-E, and then just capital L, 1L, which is what they call law school years. You're a 1L, a 2L, or a 3L for the 3 years of law school. Well, he wrote a book after his first year of law school called 1L that's incredibly on point. It's very accurate, and it makes you nervous. If you're going to go to law school, definitely read that and be prepared, but it's pretty good.
All right, well, let's talk about what you actually do now that you have graduated law school many years ago, and now you have a practice, your own practice here in town, and it basically deals with elder law issues and dealing with transfer of assets and things like that near the end of life, correct?
Right. You know, when I describe my practice as estate planning and elder law, and the estate planning is just describing how you want to transfer assets from someone who has them to the beneficiaries, to who you want to give them to, either during your life as gifts and things like that, or after death. Do we draft a will? Do we draft a trust? Do we make beneficiary designations or payable on death designations? All of those types of things. And people have all sorts of different scenarios and all sorts of different situations in families and family dynamics that might shape how we want to transfer that. Some people just want to save taxes. Well, that's a big deal. The government says you have to pay at least a minimum amount of taxes, but you don't have to pay more than is required. So how do you make sure that your stuff isn't in the wrong category? Beyond that, some people just want to make sure their kids don't get it when they turn 18. You know, a lot of younger families say if something happens to them and their life insurance at work or the 401k plan or the house goes to the 18-year-old, the 18-year-old won't be able to handle $100,000 and their life might take a different turn if they suddenly don't have to go to school and don't have to get a job. And, you know, as we get through the years, you know, sometimes it's people who have kids that might be toward that high school or college age, and they can envision them getting married. They say, if my children get married, or maybe their kids are married, their kids are 30 or 40 or 50, and they say, when my kids get this inheritance, I don't want my kids to lose it if one of my kids gets divorced, which is a pretty legitimate concern. I always tell people, I hope your kids don't get divorced, but someone's kids get divorced. And really the way it works is when you receive an inheritance, the way the overwhelming majority of people receive an inheritance, it will become available when and if that person gets divorced. And you say, wait a minute, that's an inheritance. That should be kept by my child. That's from my family or through my family line or to my descendants. And just the way people distribute those things to kids unknowingly, I don't think they do it intentionally. I can't imagine they would do it intentionally. But the way they distribute it to kids and what kids do with it and how kids pay their taxes and how they spend it and all of those factors, it becomes divisible. It's divided half and half, a divorce. And that's something you can really avoid easily. And it's not something that we have to go into a lot of detail about. It's just that you know when you give things to kids, do it in a way where they're not going to split it. And far too often people don't. So I would say a lot of those factors. As people get older, we talk about the elder law side of the practice. There's, you know, elder law just really talks about or deals with people maybe post-retirement. You know, what can you do? How do you transfer things to kids? Do you give things to kids? We've talked a little bit on the show about the change in the law from last year. The new changes about giving your home to your kids. So if anyone's done that, we can go through that again. Or if anyone has a question about it, it's 845-2155 is the number to call, I believe.
Yeah, we talked about that, you know, the changing of the rules. And, well, I'll tell you what, that really screws people up that have made plans years and years ago. All of a sudden the rules change and they're kind of stuck now, aren't they?
There's really not a whole lot you can do other than starting all over again. But
and yelling at your elected officials for
right.
changing the rules.
Right. It's even one where even the attorneys, we never did a whole lot of those types of things in our office just because there were some tax issues that didn't work out well. But a lot of people did, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It was just giving, you know, parents who wanted to give the house. They said, I don't know about anything else, but I want to make sure this house gets to my children. I say, okay, you can do that. The difficulty with it is they changed the rules. And you know, you could do everything right every step along the way, but all of a sudden the government says, we're going to change how we take a look at that, or we're going to suddenly, it's almost a tax on that transaction that doesn't kick in until years later, and you didn't know it, and now you have to deal with it.
All right, we've got a couple of phone calls here, so let's go to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Tom.
Go ahead, Tom. You're on with Alan.
Morning, Tom.
Hey, I'm sorry. I just caught you guys here. I didn't hear the first part of the show, but I got a question for you, Alan.
Sure.
My dad passed several years ago in 2010, and now I've been led to believe by my other family members that my mother's got to live 5 years past my father's death, otherwise the state will get her home. Can you answer that question? I'll get off the phone and listen to your comment.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, that might be we'd need a little bit more information for that from Tom. But the if his dad died in 2010 and presumably the house went to his mother, if Tom's concerned that the state is going to get the house, that's really only if either Tom's dad or Tom's mom needed nursing home care. You know, the nursing home care, the rules in 2009 changed so that there's actually a pair of five-year rules. And if we get deeper, we might talk about the third five-year rule, which we now have, which I won't confuse you with. That's another conversation. But I guess, Tom, the question would be, if your dad needed nursing home care and your mom and dad spent all of the assets, except there's a little bit that your mom can keep, but otherwise they have to spend all their assets on that, and the state says, we'll let your mom keep the house, but when your mom dies, then we'll get the house to make up for that cost of the care. Then the answer is, yes, the state gets the house, but the worst news is that it doesn't matter if your mom lives 5 years or doesn't live for 5 years. Your mom could live for 35 years. The state has something called estate recovery. And that's estate with an E, E-S-T-A-T-E, estate recovery, where they will recover the house or the value of the house from your mom's estate to pay for your dad's nursing home care.
Even if it's 30 years down the road.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. It's years and years and years later. Now, what Tom's mom could do is if Tom's dad died and Tom's dad had needed nursing home care and the state had helped pay for part of that cost or through the medical assistance program or the Medicaid program, and his mom then decided to give the house to the kids, you could do that, and then your mom would have to be healthy for five more years. She doesn't have to live for five more years. She just has to be healthy, you know, even more, a higher burden, I guess. She has to not need nursing home care of her own for the next 5 years after she gave the house to the kids. And if that's the case, then the house is safe. But as we've learned since last year, at your mom's death, the state would then come back and say they want a portion of it. And in all cases, depending on her age, probably a pretty big portion.
And if she decided to sell the house, then part of the proceeds would go to pay the state for whatever the nursing home care had cost for the father.
Correct. And yeah, there's different time frames for that. But if you're for most of the time, Tom, you're right, that a portion of that would go if mom or mom and the kids decided to sell the house. So, Tom, I think the question's a little bit more. We need a few more details, and that might be something that, and even at the end of the show, I can give out my number. You can even call on Monday, but I can walk you through that.
What's the old line? The only two sure things are death and taxes, and it seems like taxes are more sure than death, even in a situation like this.
Right, and they say we'll get the taxes while you're living or after death, but one way or another.
All right, let's go back to the phone here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
My name is Ken Walschmieder.
Ken, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Al, are
you on
this morning?
How are you, Ken?
I'm fine, Al. My question for you today is, about 8 to 10 years ago, we signed our home over to the children. Is it possible to reverse that today due to changes in the family situation?
Right. Well, I think you have to be very cautious, Ken, before you would do that. The preliminary answer is yes, if your kids agree. So, and we'll take this a few steps at a time. And this might be something that we talk about, maybe a theme over the course of the show. But what happens when you give things to the kids is you say, I want to give it to the kids to get it out of my name for nursing home purposes. I want to make sure that at least they get that. If I need nursing home care, the state can take every nickel I have and every nickel in my retirement accounts eventually and my wife's and everything else I have. But I, by golly, I just want to give the house to the kids. And then we'll talk to people and say, well, Ken, wait a minute, though. If you give your house to your kids and your kids get mad at you, they can kick you out of the house. If your kids get divorced, you know, they can lose half of their portion. If your kids get into a car accident, they can get sued. And you say, wait, I don't want to get kicked out of my house. So can you guarantee that I get to stay in my house? And I say, yeah, Ken, we can do that. What happens is we'll give you a life estate, and a life estate is just a legal right to continue to live in that house for the rest of your life. So we say Ken or Ken and Ken's wife, they have a life estate. They have the right to live there for the rest of their lifetime. But whenever Ken and Ken's wife pass away, that right to live there, of course, goes away because they passed away. And now the kids have the house free and clear after Ken and his wife have died.
Did you have a life estate as part of your plan to give the kids the house back 8 years ago?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah. So and most people did. So that's, I would say, it's overwhelmingly that's the way people did it. And the state just said, well, I guess Ken and his wife died. That went away. It didn't matter if Ken needed long-term care or nursing home care, which is the reason you give the kids the house in the first place. They said, after you died, you know, there's no more house. We'll collect all the other assets, but the deal was the kids get to keep your house because you did it more than 5 years ago, like you said, 8 to 10 years ago in your case.
Right.
Well, now the state, as of this year, as of 2 months from now, July 1st, as long as you live past July 1st, they say even if you gave that house away 8 to 10 years ago or 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years ago, it doesn't matter, if you gave the house away but you kept the right to live there, the life estate has a value. So that after you die, if you needed the nursing home care that you were trying to protect against, they say not only can we get all of your other money, all of your assets, your bank accounts, your retirement accounts, all of those things, we can also collect from the kids the value of the life estate after you die. And you throw up your hand and say, wait a minute here. You know, after we die, there is no value to the life estate because no one's living. You know, my wife and I have passed away. We can't live in the house anymore, so that should be zero. And the state says, we don't care. We'll collect the dollar amount that would have been available as of that time frame. So what it means is, I think we've talked about some of the percentages, and the common ones we see are probably in people in their 80s. If someone passes away when they're 82, let's say you and your wife passed away, one of you needed nursing home care, all the other assets are gone, the medical assistance or Medicaid help pay for part of the nursing home care, but the house is in the kids' names. Well, after you've died, the state comes back and says, well, Ken and his wife died, the last of them died when they were 82, so the state will get 40% of the value of the house even after you died. And
wow.
That's if you needed the nursing home care. If you don't need nursing home care at all, we don't have to worry about it. But, of course, if you don't need nursing home care, then it's kind of a moot point to begin with.
Getting back to his original question, though, there is no way for him to get the house back if the kids don't agree.
Well, step two is then to say, Ken talks to the kids and says, hey, kids, if I died when I'm 82, it's 40%. Even I think if you get to about 88, it's 30 or 31%. I mean, big, big numbers. You know, you talk about a $100,000 house, they still want $30,000 or $40,000 after you died. Can we reverse this? Well, if the kids, now you can't force the kids to do anything, Ken, because you gave them the house and it's theirs. If the kids decide that this is something that they don't think is a great idea anymore because of these law changes, and they give the house back to you, could they do that? Sure. Again, you can't force them to. They're adults. They have their own choices. But if the kids gave it back to you, then what can you do with it? Well, there are certain things you could then do with it, and we might not have time to describe everything in great detail, but basically you'd be starting that five-year clock all over again. So they give it back to you, and there's some things you can do to protect the house, but it's best if you live at least the next 5 years, or you're healthy at least the next 5 years. If you do it right, you can kind of get partial credit. If you're not healthy the full 5 years, that gets a little bit more involved. But that's a tough choice for people. Now, sometimes I've talked to people, and they said, well, what's the difference? We're going to lose 40% of it anyway. So if we bring it back and then, you know, we give it to the kids and we're healthy for 2 or 3 years, maybe we get back to that. We can protect about the same thing anyway. So it's not the biggest risk in the world, but it's one that we don't encourage people to do just because, you know, we never know. We don't have a crystal ball as to how long someone's going to live or if they'll be healthy or if they won't or all those things. But you're right, Ken. It's something I think you can take a look at. I'm not saying, and I certainly wouldn't say over the radio that you should do it or shouldn't do it, but I think it's something that you take a look at and maybe you kind of run the numbers and calculate and you see what you could actually do.
Well, I thank you so much, Al.
All right.
You're welcome, Ken.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's get another call in here. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hi, my name's Trini.
Hey, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Alan.
Morning.
A few weeks ago, Alan, you were talking about the same issue that was discussed earlier about nursing homes and going after the house after death, et cetera. So, like Social Security, Medicare is withheld from paycheck each period. And I assume Medicaid is also withheld or at least deducted, as that's where the government gets their money.
Yeah, so, there's – okay, keep going.
So my question is, if a person pays into the system for 40 years or more, builds equity in their house, and then they end up in a nursing home on Medicaid with no money other than the equity in their home, the nursing home gets reimbursed from Medicaid. And keeping in mind that a lot of people pay into the system and die early and don't collect – so after the person dies that's in the nursing home, the government goes after the house. My question is, how do they determine, the government that is, how much was paid in by the person into Medicaid versus how much the nursing home collected? How do they determine how much that of equity in that house that they're actually going to collect? Do they collect all of it?
Do they use a scalpel or do they use a broadsword?
Yeah, well, I mean, the person obviously paid into the system. They should be given credit for paying in 40 years. So how does the government decide how much of the value of that house is rightfully theirs?
Well, Trane, what they don't take anything into consideration as to how much you've paid in through the years. You do. You certainly do. But they say once you need the long-term care or once you need nursing home care or whatever the program is, they don't consider anything about what you've paid in during your working life. So that's a zero. We start from there. It only becomes how much you pay in cash after that. And if you run through your cash or if, you know, as a lot of people, most people run out of cash in the first year. So their, you know, their savings, and you can see it's, you know, between probably 76 to the low 800s or the low 8,000s a month. We see most people around the $8,200 a month, at least in this area. So they run through their cash probably in about a year, and then they have the house. And what the state does is they basically say, once you're done with the cash, we're not going to keep sending you a bill, or they will keep sending the bill, but we're not going to hound you about it because they know, you know, you have a Social Security number and they have a big computer. So they know how much you have in every account everywhere. And they say once you get down to your limit, either it, and you can keep about $2,000, that's the amount you can keep. Once you get down to the $2,000, they just accumulate it. And there's basically a running total or running balance that accumulates. And upon your death, the tell or the register stops, and that dollar amount then becomes a lien against your estate. And a lien essentially against your house. So that's what they collect. And if someone says, well, the kids are going to sell the house, so we're going to sell the house, and they go to the closing, and the people who are going to buy it come with a check. You know, they got a loan from a bank, and they come with this check for $100,000, and the title insurance company comes to the table, and they say, all right, who's going to buy this house? And, you know, this young couple wants to buy the house. They have a $100,000 check from their bank, and the kids are selling the house. You know, your kids are selling the house, and they come in, and the title insurance company kind of comes in the middle and says, well, wait a minute, we've got a lien against this house for X number of dollars. We have a lien for $100,000, or we might have a lien for $150,000, or whatever the number is. But that check that would have gone to the sellers, the selling children, then the title insurance company says, nope, we have to pay off all of the lien holders first. You have to pay off all the bills, the mortgage company, the taxes, the everything. And, oh, by the way, we see that the state has a lien, so we're going to collect that, and we're going to apply it first. And in a large number of those cases, then the kids have to sign off. They have to sign the paperwork saying that the house is transferred, but they don't actually receive any of the funds. So
or
those,
they could be stuck with
away.
A bill, the way you're talking.
Well, we don't have a debtor's prison here, so the bills get it's what's called an unsecured debt, to the effect that you don't have any more assets. So the kids won't get a bill after death.
All right.
But they will just say, you know, in most cases.
All the proceeds, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and you can see at $8,000 a month, it doesn't take long before you wipe out the value of just about all the houses or all the normal houses.
So let's say the house is valued at $100,000.
Yep.
And the person is only in the nursing home, let's say, 5 months
and
passes, versus someone that lives 5 years before they pass.
Yep.
So if you only live 5 months, and the nursing home has accumulated a bill at $8,000 a month times 5 months.
Yeah.
Do they only come back? Do they only put a lien for the actual amount that the nursing home got reimbursed?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so. Trane. That's a good point to clarify. We don't see that too often, you know, just because it's such a specific, you know, time frame to have, you're in the nursing home for long enough to accumulate a bill, but then you put the brakes on and something happens to you before it goes further. It does happen, though, where they'll say that there's a bill to the extent of this, and that has to be paid, and then the kids will get the balance. You are correct.
So they only put a lien on the house for the value, for the amount that they actually reimburse the nursing home?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
715-845-2155 is the number to call. If you have a question for Alan here this morning, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Day, my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896. That's 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896.
May is American Stroke Month. Stroke is the nation's fourth leading cause of death and a leading cause of adult disability. Yet with new therapies, many strokes can be effectively treated when detected early. Symptoms occur suddenly and may include numbness or weakness in the face, arm or leg, especially on one side of the body. Other warning signs include intense headache, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination, trouble speaking, and sudden vision changes in one or both eyes. Treatment is usually most effective within 3 hours of symptom onset. Medical imaging is often performed in the initial evaluation and the treatment of patients with stroke. Image-guided treatment can result in complete or near-complete recovery from the effects of stroke. Remember, stroke is treatable when recognized quickly. Know the symptoms and seek emergency medical help immediately when you see the signs. For information on stroke risks, symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment, visit radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder is from the Radiological Society of North America.
You know the song. On a dark desert highway. Strip away the instruments. And you're left with
warm smell of colitas.
A voice.
Rising up through the air.
Your voice.
I'm kind of new to punk radio.
Are the songs we play.
Sometimes I feel as if music brings my IQ down.
I like talk radio now a lot more than I used to when I was a youngster.
Now I'm doing something.
On AM 550, FM 99.9.
What I want to say is...
And WSAU.com.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Thousands of unidentified remains from the 9/11 terrorist attacks will be moved today to a repository inside the National September 11th Memorial Museum in Lower Manhattan. That word went out earlier this week in an email to victims' families. A team of experts from the United States is on the ground in Nigeria, ready to assist in the search for hundreds of kidnapped schoolgirls. The American team has its work cut out for it, with word coming now that the girls may have been separated into smaller groups and possibly even taken out of the country. The Wausau City employee arrested last month in an online sex crime sting has been bound over for trial. 58-year-old Dennis Rice waived his preliminary hearing on Friday, so he will be scheduled for trial. Rice was caught at the end of March by Brown County investigators conducting an undercover operation to catch online predators of children. The city had Rice on administrative leave, but he returned to work a week ago. A pretrial conference has been scheduled for May 14th at 10 in the morning. In sports, the Brewers lost to the Yankees 5-3 last night. They'll try again tonight. You can hear the game right here. Pregame show at 5:35. The Packers added a pair of new weapons for Aaron Rodgers to throw to in the draft. Fresno State wide receiver Devontae Adams in the second round and California tight end Richard Rodgers in the third round. They also picked up Southern Miss defensive tackle Kyrie Thornton in the third round as well. Pending last-minute trades, the Packers have five more picks in the draft today. The Newsline 9 weather forecast. We're looking for a nice day, sunny to partly cloudy and a high around 69. For tonight, partly cloudy, low down to 41. Sunday, cloudy, some showers likely in the morning, high 69.
For Monday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain, a high of 67. Tuesday, cloudy and cool, rain likely, and a high of 59. Wednesday, cloudy, scattered light showers again, and a high of 56. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
Brewers baseball on the Brewers station, WSAU.
Hello again, everyone.
Bob Uecker, Joe Block, and the Brewers on AM 550, FM 99.9.
All right, here we
go. WSAU.
Hey, get up! Get out of here! Go!
The Brewers are right here. AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Saturday night baseball, Brewers and Yankees at 5:35 on the Brewers station. News, talk, sports, WSAU.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
May is American Stroke Month. Stroke is the nation's fourth leading cause of death and a leading cause of adult disability. Yet with new therapies, many strokes can be effectively treated when detected early. Symptoms occur suddenly and may include numbness or weakness in the face, arm or leg, especially on one side of the body. Other warning signs include intense headache, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination, trouble speaking, and sudden vision changes in one or both eyes. Treatment is usually most effective within 3 hours of symptom onset. Medical imaging is often performed in the initial evaluation and the treatment of patients with stroke. Image-guided treatment can result in complete or near-complete recovery from the effects of stroke. Remember, stroke is treatable when recognized quickly. Know the symptoms and seek emergency medical help immediately when you see the signs. For information on stroke risks, symptoms, diagnosis, and treatment, visit radiologyinfo.org. That's radiologyinfo.org. This health reminder is from the Radiological Society of North America.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm in Wausau. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Linda.
Hi, Linda. You're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Linda.
Yes, I have a question about life insurance policies. I was told that in order to protect your life insurance policies from possible nursing home, you could sign them over to your children as owners.
Right.
I'm on a cell phone, and I'm pulled over on the side of the road, so I'm going to hang up, and if I would appreciate it if you could address that situation and okay. what one can do. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Thanks for hanging on. Okay.
Thanks, Linda. Yes, and thanks for your cell phone safety there on the road. It's a good role model today. Yes, life insurance policies, there are a couple different issues with those. One is that a life insurance policy has value while you're living. So it might be that dad has a policy. It's a $100,000 policy, we'll use as a big round number. And not everyone has a policy that large. Now, of course, some people have much larger, but use that as a kind of a round number. He has a $100,000 policy. And there are different types of insurance. Some is just term insurance that says if you die before the end of a term, then we pay out. But there's no actual value. There's no cash value. So if you buy a 20-year term policy, some 30-year-old buys a 20-year term policy, and if they make it to age 50, the policy goes away and they have to buy another one or you do different things. Now, a lot of life insurance, people say, well, I need it longer than that. I don't think I'm going to die by 50. I want it for the rest of my lifetime. So they sell something called permanent insurance. Sometimes it's whole life. Sometimes it's a universal life or variable universal life. But the common denominator is that it has a cash value. So the $100,000 policy might have a $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 cash value. And what happens is, if someone needs long-term care, if someone needs nursing home care, the state says you need to cash in that policy. And there are certain amounts, like we've talked about before, there are certain minimal amounts that you can keep, that each person can keep. But they'll say you have a policy, it's got a $30,000 cash value. You need to cash it in and give us the $30,000 towards your care. And, you know, Dad says, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense, because if we cash in the $30,000, we're going to lose $100,000. You know, we lose the extra $70,000 difference. We lose that entire death benefit. And the nursing home or the state says, we don't care, give us the $30,000. And if you kind of shout louder and you say, wait, we'd lose the entire death benefit. We lose $100,000 by giving you $30,000. The state says, again, we don't care. Give us the $30,000. So you end up, and you do. You have to give them the $30,000. So that's a problem. If somehow someone keeps one of those policies, or they have a group policy or a term policy, sometimes just think of a generic term policy where they're the owner. Now our state is attempting to collect the death benefit if you owned that policy. Some people say, well, we don't have to do anything with a term policy because there isn't any cash value and the state doesn't care about it. Well, they might not care while you're living, but you know, the concept we talked about with estate recovery earlier in the show, now we have something called expanded estate recovery, which basically just means we're going after more stuff, and that stuff includes life insurance policies that you have, or it might be life insurance that your mom has. You know, Dad needed nursing home care. He died. Later, mom's got a policy that pays out when she dies, and the state says, now we're going to go after the beneficiaries for that money because mom owned a life insurance policy at her death. And you can see how this just spirals into, you know, there's nowhere to hide anymore. So, Linda, your question is, can you give that away? Could Dad, ahead of time, say, I'm going to give away my life insurance policy to the kids? They're the beneficiaries anyway, and if Dad determines he's never going to take the cash value out, he's never going to cash this thing in and go spend the money, he says, I'm just going to give the ownership of the policy. Now, not the beneficiaries, not the after-death beneficiaries, but he says the actual ownership of the policy to my kids. It still pays off when Dad dies, but it's owned by, and technically the premiums are supposed to be paid by, or they're owed by too, by the kids themselves. And you can do that. Now, Linda, the difficulty with that is that the state says if you do that and you don't do it at least 5 years ahead of time, then that whole policy gets sucked back into, you know, Dad's pot if he needs nursing home care, and the state is going to attempt to coerce the kids to give the policy back or give that value back. Life insurance policies do, though, offer a planning opportunity, just because, you know, you can make a $30,000 gift and it might be a $100,000 death benefit or whatever the numbers are. You know, death benefit can be lower, higher, all kinds of things, but...
Did you just use the word coerce as regarding the Department of Revenue trying to get money from someone?
Now, if someone pulls out the Webster's and says coerce means threaten with force, let's just say I'm using a loose interpretation of the word coerce. They are going to incentivize the children to give that policy back. They're going to financially coerce the family to give the policy back. Maybe that's a better way to put it. No, there's no threat of physical force.
But 5 years goes by, and then they're free and clear?
Yeah, if you can give away more than 5 years ahead of time. Now, most people don't. Most people just don't have the thought process. They say, we want to protect the house. The insurance, no, that's not something we think about. That's just something in the background. If I die, it pays out a death benefit. But increasingly, this is becoming a larger part of people's estate planning. And from your financial planning standpoint, I will leave the experts decide how much life insurance every person needs. I'm a huge fan of life insurance, by the way. I think everyone should have something to cover certain aspects. Now, if you get to a certain point and you say, I have my assets are so enormous that buying some death benefit isn't going to change anything, it's probably a different conversation, and there are still some different uses of life insurance. I'm not a life insurance expert. I'm not a life insurance salesperson. I don't know any of those details. I will leave that to the people who do, but I think it's something you should think about. And if you do have that policy, Mom and Dad, and you're still owning it, you need to figure out somewhere to do it. I'm not sure you give it to the kids. There are alternatives to giving it to the kids. You might still want to be in control of it, but I think you have to think about how you try to protect that.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to? Hello. Let's try it again. Hello. Hello, hello. Nope, not there. All right, let's try this one. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy, you're on with that one. Go ahead.
Morning, Jimmy.
Yeah, I have a question. I have two sons. and their mother had just died, and we've been divorced for years, but she got the house in the divorce, and they've already taken her IRA in cash, and I was wondering, if they sell that house and just take the cash, how much are they going to have to pay in taxes on that and the IRA?
Okay. Yeah, good question. Well, Jimmy, there are two different answers because those are taxed completely differently. With the house, there's something that it's called a step-up in basis or a step-up in cost basis. And this happens for other assets. Might be, you know, other people listening out there, it might be land, it might be a cottage, it could be mutual funds that you've bought that have gone up in value. With the house, hopefully whatever she paid for it or whatever the two of you paid for it before the divorce, that it's worth more now than it was when you paid for it. But let's say it's you paid $50,000 for the house and now it's worth $80,000, you know, just easy numbers. If she gives that to the kids, but she waits until after death, then they get what's called a step-up in cost basis. Some of these people call it a step-up in basis, but it's a step-up in the cost that you paid for it. You paid 50, now it's worth 80. That's a capital gain, and in some circumstances, you have to pay a capital gains tax. But at death, we get what's called it's almost an artificial step-up in basis. So the 50 that you paid gets reset to the date of death value. So now it's worth $80,000 on the date of death. Your kids can turn around, sell the house for $80,000, zero tax. So that's a good thing. It's for tax purposes. Now, we've been talking a lot about asset protection and nursing homes and all kinds of things. But for pure tax purposes, you want to figure out a way to step up that cost basis. So your kids could sell that house for no tax. Now, if they keep the house and say, oh, we're going to keep it, we're going to rent it out to a niece or a nephew or just someone in the newspaper, and 3 years later it's worth $100,000, well, then they would have to pay a tax on the difference between the value as of when their mother died and the value of when they sold it. But if they do that soon enough after death, there's zero tax on the house. So if they want to sell it now, zero tax. So far, so good on the house. Asset number two, the IRA, though, we have different Roth IRAs and things like that, but just if this is just a normal, run-of-the-mill, traditional IRA, maybe it used to be a 401k plan or some kind of work retirement plan, just an IRA, what your wife did, or I'm sorry, your ex-wife, their mother, was she didn't have to pay income taxes on the money that went into the IRA. And then it went up in value, hopefully. It was a CD in the bank got interest, or a mutual fund might have gotten some increase in value. So let's say that if she has an $80,000 IRA, whatever the number is, if it's an $80,000 IRA, your boys now have to take that money out over a period of a number of years, and as they take the money out, whatever they take out has to go onto their tax return. So if they took out the whole chunk in 1 year, they have to pay taxes on all of it in 1 year. Now, that might be bad for their income tax bracket. So sometimes people will take that out over a number of years to try to take it out in smaller pieces and pay a little bit of tax each year. But the IRA you have to pay taxes on, and the house you do not. So kind of a you know, half and half there.
Yeah, the IRA, I was afraid that they should have rolled it over in their own IRA, but because I thought maybe they'd have to pay 40% or whatever. But
yeah, well, they can't roll it into their own IRA. You can only do that with a spouse, and only if a spouse is usually below 70 and a half. But so they can't. They're not allowed to roll an IRA in because that wasn't a spouse who died. It was their mother. But what they can do is, like they would say, this is the Mary Jones IRA, FBO, or for the benefit of Bobby Jones. You know, that's Bobby gets one half of it. So then he has to take it out, and it depends on if your wife was over 70 and a half or younger than 70 and a half. I'm sorry, their mother was over 70 and a half or younger. It'll change the life expectancy, and it'll change when they take it out. But there's once you figure out that date, then the IRS just has a period of years, and they say, okay, Bobby Jones, you have to take out X percent of that per year, maybe 4% or 5% or 8%, at least that much this year, and then a little bit more every year. So the government's going to get their tax. Now, some people, what they do is they say, I'm just going to cash the whole thing in and pay tax on the whole thing, and whatever's left, I'm going to go buy a boat, which is not a good long-term strategy. But that's where you pay the most in tax, but that's what some people do. So,
all right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
715-845-2155. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. We're talking to Attorney Alan Haugum today on the program. Back in a moment on WSAU.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up, impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different, which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Cat Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, and of course, companionship. Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
Fantastic cat. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
On any other day of the year, we tell you to listen for news updates at the top and bottom of the hour. To listen for the talk and topics that matter to you.
That's all that matters.
But this Sunday, you should be listening to your mother.
It's about damn time.
No matter how difficult that might be.
Sit up straight. Chew with your mouth closed.
Happy Mother's Day.
When you're done, take out the garbage.
On WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm in Wausau. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Steve.
Steve, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Steve. Yeah, Alan, Tom, great program. I got a question for you. Say I have a kid that's in a very elite college.
Okay.
Okay. Now, in his college, if you don't, say wife and I die, we have assets, debts also. However, cost a lot of money to go to this college.
Right.
And they can stab, I believe, 25% of his assets in case my wife and I die. And, of course, if that happened, well, then you'd almost have to sell everything to realize probably his share of the will.
Oh, right.
If we went the will route.
Right.
Now, is there a way of excluding him out of the will?
There is, you know, and I think unless you have something that's terminal, if you say, boy, I have a, and that can happen. You know, we'll have people who have pancreatic cancer. And,
well, yeah, I understand
all
that.
All those kinds of things.
You die in an accident.
Yeah, I think you can. I would be really, now this is more of a counseling thing than an actual legal thing, but I would be really hesitant, Steve, to exclude him from the will on the possibility of an accident, because what happens then is he gets done with college, he's a successful engineer somewhere, and, you know, 30 years later you die and you've never looked at your will and you find out that your son's excluded. You know, we don't want to do that. There are some ways where you can kind of hedge that a little bit. You know, it's probably more of a concern if something happens to him when he's a senior in high school and he's filling out that FAFSA, that federal application for student loans.
I know
loans.
All about that.
Yeah, more
exactly
than we want to talk about.
A very simple thing to do, and it's for everybody, poor and rich alike.
Right. No, I think what you're talking about, you can do. I think what you would do is sit down with that. This is one where you do need to sit down with your estate planning attorney and just very specifically. Good. Very good. Yeah, I bring this up. This should be, you know, on page one. Maybe this isn't question number one, but it should be one of the first five just because it's on your mind. And just say, what can we do for a short period of time until he's done with school? Because he's at this elite program. It's probably very expensive, and there's all kinds of financial ties to it. Is there anything we can do? And I think you just go through that specifically for your particular type of assets, which is the other thing. It'll change depending on the kind of assets you have.
Yeah.
So, it's a good question. And just go through that with the estate planning attorney, and they can help you out.
Another question.
Sure.
How long does a person have when a spouse dies to go through probate?
Well, there's the state of Wisconsin says that you're required, quote unquote, required to submit a will to probate within 30 days.
If there is
of the date of death. Yep. And that's really just a rule. So if there's a creditor and you don't submit the will, then the creditor can start the probate, you know, because you can't just hold off on submitting the will or starting the probate to keep someone from collecting a debt. So this 30-day rule is really more geared for that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's really up to you. It's beyond that. If you're willing to deal with the state's wrath and skip that 30-day requirement, then it's just about your assets. You know, do you have any assets that don't transfer? Some people never submit a will. Whether that's good or bad, they don't submit a will because everything is joint. The house is joint. The checking account's joint. The IRA has a beneficiary designation to the spouse.
What about a corporation?
You might not need one. With a corporation, it depends on if the deceased owned any shares individually.
Yeah.
Especially a family owned. Mm-hmm. If they owned any shares individually, your taxes are going to get to be a little bit of a nightmare if you go out more than a year.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting.
It's one where you just do it. I mean, it's, boy, unless there's some strategy that you have not to, I think you just do it. Now, ideally, when you talk to your estate planning attorney on Monday, is you figure out a way not to go through probate at all. You know, figure out a way to avoid probate, and then you can skip all the time and expense, and it's just much, much easier. You know, get that done ahead of time. If someone owns shares in a corporation, particularly a privately held or a family corporation, that's part of the deal. You know, it's part of what you probably would do to save some money later.
You know, there's an old saying, failure to plan is a plan to fail.
It is. It absolutely is.
You know. Hey, Al.
Yes.
Appreciate your time. And, Tom, you run a great program.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Thanks
I agree
much.
With you, Steve. Thanks for the compliment.
715-845-2155, but we are just about out of time. But if folks want to decide after hearing this today that they need to come in and visit someone like you, what should they bring along? What do you need to see in that first visit?
You know, what we usually do is when people schedule a meeting, we'll give them some homework and say, usually give them a couple of pages. We need probably name, rank, and serial number about them. You know, what's their birthday? When were they married? All those kinds of things. Do they have children? Do they have grandchildren? How old are the kids? You know, are they Wisconsin residents or not? Kind of the basics. And then some details about assets. You know, do you have... are your assets in real estate? Some people, it's just a house and a back 40. Other people say, no, we rent, but we have a big IRA and we have life insurance. Other people have a condo in Phoenix, and that's different because it's outside Wisconsin. All different areas, but that will change how you plan. So we say, here, get those things ready ahead of time. That way, when you come into the office, you can hit the ground running, and it just makes it much more efficient. And then beyond that, if you have any questions, you know, we'll ask people, do your kids have any health issues? Do your kids have any marital issues? One of the things that we're going to talk about on a future show that we're going to talk about today, but we had some fantastic calls, is how you deal with kids, especially if your relationship with them or with their spouse isn't perfect. We find that happens more and more these days. So I think those are a lot of the questions to think about ahead of time. And if you can get that gathered, you can, like I said, you can hit the ground running, have a really efficient meeting.
All right. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
I would say there's a couple of ways. Our office is here on the west side of Wausau. Our phone number is 715-843-5001, 843-5001. Or our website is www.haugumlaw.com, HOUGUMLAW, HowgumLaw.com. And those are probably the easiest ways.
All right, and I'm sure you'll be back in here down the road pinch hitting for Merle once again.
I'll bet. Yep, it's fun.
All right,
time.
Talk to you then.
Thank you, Tom.
That's Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm joining us here today on the program. We are out of time for today. We've got the news coming up. Also, the Polka Show is on the way. And don't forget Brewer Baseball tonight. The Brewers taking on the Yankees once again at Miller Park. And the pregame show for that coming up at 5:35. It's all right here on WSAU. Oh, one more thing. I have to get my shameless plug in for the pancake breakfast tomorrow, the Wausau Legion Baseball Pancake Breakfast at the Bunkers Restaurant and Tribute Golf Course, 8 to noon tomorrow. All you can eat pancakes and sausage. I hope you can join us and all the money supporting Wausau Legion Baseball. I'll even serve you your coffee tomorrow morning, so come on out and join us at the pancake breakfast. That'll do it for today on WSAU.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. One body's been found in the woods from a hot air balloon that hit a power line and caught fire in Virginia. Two people and the balloon basket are missing.
Witnesses tell us they may have seen two jump or possibly somehow they got out, whether they leapt on their own or maybe the basket and the condition of it, they fell. We don't know that for certain.
Virginia State Police spokeswoman Corinne Geller, a hot air balloon festival there is now canceled. First Lady Michelle Obama taking over the weekly presidential address to talk about the nearly 300 schoolgirls kidnapped in Nigeria.
Let us hold their families in our hearts during this very difficult time.
An American team is in Nigeria to help.
Pentagon Press Secretary Admiral John Kirby says the troops are not there to conduct a military operation.
Subject matter experts that can help advise and assist the Nigerian authorities in their search for these girls.
The team will work out of the embassy in Nigeria, offering their expertise. More than 270 schoolgirls are believed to be in the hands of the Islamic militant group Boko Haram. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
The weekly Republican address shared by 14 members of Congress, each talking about bills they've had stalled.
12 months ago, the House passed H.R. 3, my bill, to build the Keystone XL pipeline and support more than 42,000 direct and indirect jobs. Americans are still waiting for the president and the Senate Democrats to act.
Nebraska Congressman Lee Terry there. Other bills ticked off include changing welfare regulation, curtailing patent litigation, and scaling back regulations for small business. A state judge opening the door for gay couples in Arkansas to get married, ruling a ban passed by voters in 2004, is unconstitutional. Now, clerks can issue licenses today if they want, but the state's attorney general says he is bound to appeal the ruling, asking the judge to put it on hold in the meantime. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Weekdays on Fox Business.
Bottom line here is we want investors to be prepared for the day ahead, the week ahead.
Opening bell with Maria Bartiromo.
The concept is to bring perspective, analysis. All day long, I'm speaking with global allocators of capital, CEOs, heads of state, so I can anticipate some of the major moves or reactions, giving investors an edge.
Opening bell with Maria Bartiromo. Weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern on Fox Business.
Weeknight, Kelly brings the heat.
Developing tonight, a Kelly File exclusive. This is breaking news. We're just getting this.
Inside today's most explosive stories.
That's not the way it was supposed to go down.
Getting answers and challenging the status quo.
Sir, it's a back and forth. I'm not just going to give you the platform for a soliloquy. Don't come on here and spit. I will leave that to you to decide.
Powerful, insightful, fair, and balanced. Megyn Kelly taking prime time to the next degree.
Join me for the Kelly File, weeknights at 9.
Now, weekend news from AM 550, FM 99.9 WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. More details have been released about the case involving a Marshfield man facing federal drug charges for allegedly trafficking synthetic marijuana.
50-year-old Kenneth Chastain managed Avalon on 4th LLC. Federal agents say Chastain marketed a form of the synthetic drug called Spice or Sunburst. Agents have 29 counts listed in the indictment against Chastain for distributing the product to retailers in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Nebraska. Investigators believe Chastain was getting the illegal drug from Colorado sources that were bringing it in from China. He was one of hundreds of people arrested Wednesday in a 25-state coordinated effort. He'll have a court appearance May 22nd in Denver, Colorado. Citations have been issued to the driver involved in that crash Thursday night in Wausau. An elderly man drove his SUV through the front window of the UW Marathon Center for Civic Engagement. Wausau Police Chief Jeff Hardell says the driver hit the wrong pedal.
That driver attempted to apply the brake.